most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. It's Wednesday, November 7th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us here at Normal. Help us end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. Folks, it's a very exciting day after Election Day today with great results in from both Denver, Colorado and Haley, Idaho. Marijuana also came into play as an issue in a vote in Cincinnati, Ohio. We're going to speak with Mason Tvert, the director of SAFER in the Mile High City of Denver, Colorado, here in the program today. Talk about the results on I-100. We'll also speak with Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre. We'll talk about the different initiatives happening around the country and get some more details on the lowest law enforcement or deprioritization ordinances out there. Also in the program today, we've got our regular weekly segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, our cannabis science segment. We're going to discuss the story from last week's Normal News press release that pot use has actually dropped in Great Britain since they reclassified cannabis to a lower level in their controlled substances scheme over there. More on that with Dr. Mitch Earlywine today in our cannabis science segment. Let's get right into our election roundup today. Here's breaking news. Our breaking news today, marijuana ballot initiatives pass in Denver and Haley, Idaho. Deprioritization momentum continues. Voters in Denver, Colorado, and Haley, Idaho approved ballot initiatives yesterday, decreasing penalties for adults who possess and use cannabis. In Denver, 56% of voters approved initiated Question 100, which directs the Denver Police Department and the City Attorney's Office to make activities related to the investigation, citation, and/or arrest of adult cannabis users their lowest law enforcement priority, and would also appoint an 11-member marijuana policy review panel to monitor police activity as it pertains to cannabis law enforcement. The vote marks the second time in 3 years that a majority of Denver's citizens have elected to liberalize local pot penalties. In 2005, Denver voters approved an ordinance that sought to abolish civil and criminal penalties for the possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana by citizens aged 21 and older. However, local police disregarded the municipal ordinance, instead electing to enforce state cannabis laws, which mandate a civil fine for minor marijuana possession offenses. This year's deprioritization effort was launched in response to local law enforcement's failure to abide by the 2005 ordinance. Seattle voters passed a similar law in 2003, which has led to a 75% reduction in citywide marijuana arrests. Several other cities, including Santa Cruz, California, Missoula, Montana, and Columbia, Missouri, have enacted similar initiatives in recent years. In Haley, Idaho, a city of about 7,000 residents, voters passed 3 of 4 ballot initiatives regarding marijuana. The initiatives were sponsored by the Liberty Lobby of Idaho and coordinated by activist Ryan Davidson. Just over 1,200 of the estimated 3,400 registered voters in the city cast ballots in yesterday's election. The three initiatives that passed covered the following areas: to legalize the medical use of marijuana, to legalize the farming of industrial hemp, and to make marijuana enforcement the lowest priority for city police. A community oversight committee is tasked with implementing the new ordinances. The fourth marijuana initiative in Haley, which did not pass, would have required the city to tax and regulate all marijuana sales within the city, and would have created a separate community oversight committee to implement and explore full marijuana legalization. The three initiatives that passed also require the city of Haley and other agencies of local government to lobby other branches of government in the state for marijuana law reform. More information about the initiatives are available on Normal's website at norml.org. Stay tuned today for full election coverage. We'll speak with Mason Tvert in Denver, Colorado, and Alan St. Pierre in Washington, D.C. That's coming up next. And starting off our election roundup today, we are going to speak with the director of SAFER in Denver, Colorado, Mason Tvert. I-100, the initiative to make marijuana the city's lowest law enforcement priority, passed yesterday. Mason, welcome back to the show. Well, an exciting day today, Mason. I-100 passing.
Thanks for having me.
With about 56% of the vote. Are you surprised by the good turnout in what is an all-mail-in election?
Honestly, I am a little surprised. We were concerned that turnout was going to be really low, and a whole lot of votes came pouring in this last couple days. So we're glad to see that. It is still a little low, but there's more support now than ever before, which is very interesting. It's lower turnout than last year, but more support in the city. So it's clearly a growing trend.
And this vote was a very clear indication, Mason, of Denver voters' commitment to ensuring a change in marijuana enforcement policy there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the people couldn't make it any clearer. And in light of the fact that both of the major newspapers in Denver, the Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post, encouraged voters to vote no on this, as did every city official and the police and so on, the fact that they still came out and voted yes on it really sends a strong message.
Now, the city government there must be taking a hard look at this vote today. How do you think they will move forward from here?
It'll be interesting. As of right now, they've kind of signaled that they might be trying to sidestep this once again, and we're certainly going to do everything we can to bring the issue front and center and really ram it down their throats and make them explain why is it that Seattle can implement this type of measure. Why is it that Missoula, Montana, just a couple weeks ago, can implement a policy stating police shall not arrest people. Why is it that these other cities that pass these measures are implementing them successfully, yet our city is somehow says they're unable to do so? It's a good question. I hope they have a good answer.
Now, you mentioned Seattle there, where there was support for deprioritization on the city council. The head of the Denver City Council said to the Denver Post today he wasn't sure how to implement the new ordinance. Is city council support perhaps the issue now?
In Denver, they certainly don't. We have a couple council members, newer members, who have suggested that they support changing the law overall, but they said they didn't support this just based on it, state and federal law. They're clearly just not well informed on the issue. We've made it very clear that state and federal law do not matter in this case. But they're the minority when it comes to the rest of the council, and many of them are new, so they might be a little worried, but you know, it's going to take more and more of these types of elections and these types of victories to get these people to come around and start taking a better position on this.
And yet, city councilors in Denver and other politicians must be taking note of this vote today, as these folks rely on those very same citizens to elect them to their posts.
That's absolutely right. And you know, that touches on a point that has frustrated me for some time, which is that despite support for this issue and reforming marijuana laws, what we're seeing is that it's just not a high priority for a lot of voters. The same voters who approved this initiative also voted for these officials. And it's upsetting, but, you know, I think more and more as these measures pass and as our city officials continue to cause such, you know, trouble and be so stubborn, I think they're probably going to start losing votes. And you know, that's what it's going to take is more and more of this moving forward and them having to explain themselves. And hopefully, we, you know, who knows, maybe we'll see a council member go down as a result. It would certainly be very cool.
Now, Denver is not the only city where there have been safer initiatives. Some of them have been on campuses as well. But Mason, has this work and success in Denver perhaps spurred some further activity on this theme in Colorado?
What we do like to do is work with other organizations, particularly normal chapters and normal chapters on college campuses especially. And what we do is we work with these other organizations to run safer campaigns and to run ballot initiatives and other, you know, media campaigns and so on to raise attention to this issue. And we would like to see that continue to happen. So hopefully this will get more people motivated and jazzed and ready to go. And we're certainly willing to help anyone we can take action in their area.
Now, looking at the media over the last few days, of course, there was the New York Times article yesterday. The media has focused on the initiative and the successful initiative in 2005, as well as some mention of the increase in local arrests.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you look at the numbers, there's just no denying it. It's part of why we're doing this. As we all know, arrests are at an all-time high nationally, and that's also the case in Denver. And it doesn't need to be. You know, you look at a city like Seattle, where they have had arrests going down every year versus a city like Denver, where they've been going up every year. And, you know, it just goes to show that cities can opt out of this marijuana prohibition. They can say, not us. We're not going to take part. And we would like to see Denver become one of those cities.
Now, Mason, is there something specific about voters in Denver or voters in Colorado that make this such a strongly supported issue there?
It's a great question. I certainly think that, you know, this is a city that was ready for this. And you know, if I said that we came here and turned the city around so they support this, I'd be lying. I mean, there's clearly a lot of support for reform before we even started these efforts. But what we've done is we've managed to harness that desire to see changes. And, you know, I would not be surprised to see these types of efforts go on elsewhere. It just so happens that when it comes to running, you know, any sort of campaign or anything related to an election, you just don't have the resources there to do it unless there's a chance you're going to win. And that's certainly the case in Denver and some other places in Colorado, but it may not be in other cities. And, you know, we really encourage those people in cities where change doesn't seem possible to take action. I mean, even if they can't pass an initiative, you know, nothing's going to change until we get the message out there to people and get them thinking about this, because when people think about this is when we win.
And you mentioned the funding and the volunteers, so let me ask you about the nuts and bolts of running this ballot initiative. How many staffers and volunteers did it take to make this happen?
You know, we basically spent less than $50,000 on this entire endeavor. So including the petition drive, everything, we actually spent about $46,000. That includes two staff members, myself and one other individual. And then the rest of it was really fueled by volunteers. We had, you know, probably about 100 or more people get involved at some point or another doing something, whether it was coming to a rally or making phone calls here this last week or just handing out flyers. But, you know, we had a good solid core of maybe 20 people that were really involved. And that's generally how it works. But, you know, we found that over the last 3 years, more and more people are getting more and more involved. And, you know, that's what building a movement's all about.
Righto. So definitely some funding, a core group of volunteers, and a very dedicated staff. And you've got a successful ballot initiative in one of America's largest cities. Well, Mason, many, many thanks again for joining us here today. And a big congratulations to you and your volunteers for this momentous win in Denver. I look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Thanks so much.
Thank you again. Mason Tvert is the director of Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation in Denver, Colorado. You can find them online at saferchoice.org. We have links to them on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Stay tuned. We've got Alan St. Pierre coming up next. He's going to give us a roundup of what happened in Haley, Idaho. Also talk about deprioritization ordinances in general and the momentum moving forward for marijuana law reform around the country right now. Stay tuned also today. We've got our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine coming up later in the show. Joining us next for our Election Day Roundup is Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre from Washington, D.C. Alan, welcome back to the show today.
Good day, Chris.
A very good day looking at these election results today. Alan, let's start off by talking about Haley, Idaho, which passed 3 of 4 ballot initiatives that liberalize marijuana policy locally in a town of about 7,000 people.
Yes, it was great to, by about 10 o'clock Eastern time last night, Tuesday, to be able to, through the Internet, ascertain that these two locales had, in fact, passed in the affirmative the initiatives before them, at least in the case of Denver and in Haley, 3 of the 4 initiatives.
And were you surprised to see such a small city in Idaho pass this type of new marijuana ordinance?
Generally, yes, because Idaho would be in that, depending on how you view things, lowest or top tier of states that really just have not only bad marijuana laws on the books, really, really aggressive enforcement, but little or no cannabis community per se. Even in the major towns or cities such as they are in Idaho with universities and colleges, there just hasn't been much cannabis culture there. So it was really heartening to see that a small town would move in that direction. And I say that with some irony because I think it was just 2 or 3 years ago, the anti-drug group Drug Free America Foundation somehow glubbed onto Idaho as being a potential hotbed of reform. And they put out this absurd, like 30-minute long anti-marijuana / anti-normal videotape called Idaho in the Balance, and it is hysterical to watch, but kind of prescient in that it did likely predict that there was going to be some changes that even we didn't envisage.
And it is a very interesting case, as the four initiatives dealt with almost all of the ways one could liberalize marijuana laws. They included legalized medical marijuana, hemp farming, a lowest law enforcement priority ordinance, and the one that didn't pass, which would have taxed and regulated all marijuana sales. So a pretty comprehensive approach there in Haley.
Yeah, that was a very good example of taking essentially the four major issues around cannabis: legalization, decriminalization, medicalization, and industrial hemp, and just simply ask the citizens, you know, pull a lever, push a button, what do you want? And I think it was very informative, as it always is, these local and state initiatives at informing the media and the general public and policymakers about what people genuinely want to see in reform of marijuana laws, and not based on semi-annual polls that come out from, say, large news organizations.
Also, too, Alan, there was a vote out in Ohio where marijuana came into play this week. We got the story in this morning from Paul Armentano. He was alerted by Rob Ryan at the Ohio Patients Network. But in Cincinnati, where marijuana laws were made harsher by local government, there was a ballot initiative to raise the local sales tax in order to pay for a new jail. and the Ohio Patients Network and others rightfully argued that a change in marijuana policy could have contributed to more jail space being needed, and the voters ended up turning down that tax yesterday.
Yes, that certainly was a initiative that was a little under the radar scope, one, because as you indicated, it didn't really have a one-to-one connection to cannabis, except for the opponents of this initiative, in this case proponents of marijuana law reform, were readily able to tie the increased cost of prisons and the taxation therein in marijuana law reform and prohibition. And so they were apt in pointing out that it is often the marijuana consumer who will be occupying one of those jail cells and the cost therein to the taxpayer.
Now, Alan, while this was kind of a quiet off-election year, especially with the big presidential race coming up next year, these marijuana issues really show that there is a lot of support for a change in marijuana policy. Just look at Denver, where there were over 39,000 votes cast in a mail-in only election voting in favor of I-100. Shows just how serious voters are when they get the chance of voting on an issue about marijuana liberalization.
They are, and it is with lots of credit to Mason and Safer that they are now mobilized and educated 3 years into this effort. And so not only did it pass there with some flying colors, but it now joins Seattle, Missoula, Columbia, Missouri, Amherst, Massachusetts, Ann Arbor, Madison, Wisconsin, all places that in the last 10 or 15 years have either decriminalized or brought to the lowest police priority cannabis law enforcement. And so I think it's very, very heartening to see what came out of Denver, and I think it bodes well for a potential statewide initiative next year or the year after.
Righto. Now, Alan, let's talk a bit in general about marijuana deprioritization and making it the lowest law enforcement priority. We've mentioned the 2003 ordinance that went into effect in Seattle, and there has been a dramatic decline in minor marijuana possession arrests there. But there have been cities like Denver where these have been pushed aside by local governments, and they say it's trumped by state or even federal law. Is there any precedent for that interpretation?
Well, I think what the local officials are doing is to their jeopardy. They're not following Tip O'Neill's famous maxim that all politics are local. And in seeing the vote totals, they should wantonly follow the will of the voters in this situation, in that no rights are being taken away. There is no injury being cast to others. If these votes are affirmations of the will of the voters. And so, you know, to have the city council in Denver claim, I think quite incorrectly, that they could not follow the will of the voters and make marijuana a deprioritized law enforcement endeavor, and that they somehow have to roll over like a dog and give their belly up to the federal government on this, is absurd. There are many dozens of examples around the United States of local municipalities that have much more tolerant and enlightened marijuana policies and laws than do their state, than do the federal government. So one of the great things about our country is if your local mores and values dictate a certain policy decision, well, we allow for that in this country, and that is, by definition, I think, the laboratories of democracy.
Now, Alan, there have been a number of these lowest law enforcement priority initiatives around the country. You mentioned Amherst, Massachusetts. Tell us about some of the other places in the U.S. that have localized marijuana reform in place. It does seem to be getting more common.
In some ways, there are some official, there's three different levels here, if you will. There's the official decriminalization policies that happen, and good examples of such would be Columbia, Ann Arbor, and Madison. My old stomping grounds of Amherst, Massachusetts, they passed an initiative some years ago to very much tell the police to make marijuana a low priority. They didn't decriminalize it. They just simply made it a low priority, kind of similar to what's gone on in Denver. However, I should remind folks that Colorado and Denver is a state that already has decriminalized 1 ounce of marijuana with a $100 fine. What Mason and Safer and company were trying to do was bring that from a $100 fine to $0 fine. And then other examples, and the lowest common denominator here is clear. Austin, Gainesville, Boulder, all of these places, Chapel Hill, these are where the big college towns are, Burlington, Vermont, places where the state itself has not officially decriminalized marijuana, but within the municipality that houses the big flagship state university, in practice, they've decriminalized marijuana. And one of my favorite examples of decriminalization that is unspoken, largely, is in Pittsburgh. And this takes a little bit to explain. And the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has some pretty harsh marijuana laws, generally speaking. But in Pittsburgh, about 15 years ago, there were some race riots going on, a lot of tension going on in the city. There was a blue ribbon commission that was put together. Groups like Normal were asked to come and testify. And one of the things that came out of this meeting was that the interface between the African-American community and law enforcement was greatly enhanced by marijuana prohibition. Pittsburgh is a city of front porches and stoops and people hanging out, and so when people were using marijuana, it made it really readily easy for police to detect it when they were walking down the street or on bicycle patrol. And so they started just to set up these constant harassments between the two entities. And so it was recommended that if marijuana could be decriminalized, then that would reduce this friction that was really starting to fuel serious race relation problems in the city. So the city administrators and the elected officials did not have the political will to say, we are going to decriminalize marijuana. So what they did was came up with an ingenious plan, if you will, and that is, almost 100 years ago in Pittsburgh, when it was a sort of thriving city, and it's a very hilly city with lots of streetcars, and 100-plus years ago, the communications were mainly driven by early telephone and or wire services with above-ground wires. Well, back then, a law was created called the Noxious Weed Act, and for a citizen, a resident who did not keep these noxious weeds from growing outside their property and pulling down utility lines, people got these small fines. Well, today, if you were outside of a Pittsburgh Penguins game or a Pittsburgh Steelers game and you were to get caught with a small amount of marijuana, as an example, today you would get a small fine, and if you really paid attention to what the public law is stated on your ticket, you'd find out that it's almost a 100-year-old law called the Noxious Weed Law. So, and in fact, Pittsburgh has decriminalized small amounts of marijuana, but they would not say so publicly.
That is very interesting, because in Denver, the police say, oh, it's already a low priority for us. But the arrests go up 15% in 2 years alone. And the law enforcement opposition to these deprioritization ordinances, they always follow that same line. Well, just vote no on the initiative, because we already consider it a low priority. Now, obviously, it's tough to trust those statements. So these ballot initiatives confirming the community sentiment on this issue is so very important.
Well, it's very important on a couple different levels. One is we should not, in my personal view, leave this much subjectivity to both police and prosecutors about who's going to get prosecuted and into what jurisdiction, whether it's local, county, state, or federal. And second, these are really important on a couple different levels. One, these initiatives are a relatively low-cost way to educate the general public. It motivates cannabis law reform supporters. It directs the media to the issue of marijuana law reform. And lastly, it instructs elected policymakers of the will of the citizens regarding cannabis law reform. So whether or not the officials move forward with the law, which would be unfortunate, such as it is in Denver, that they did not. But what did it do? It created a second round of votes in Denver. It has now been affirmed by vote. It's been discussed widely in the media and editorial and columnist pages. So, again, for the relatively low cost, Mason and Safer have done a great thing in Denver in re-educating what, in essence, is the base of the entire state. A large chunk of the entire state's population is in the Denver metro area, and as we can see, a majority of them clearly, affirmatively support reforming marijuana laws.
Now, Alan, since these have been year after year and many of these have passed, Do you think that it's getting easier to pass this type of ordinance in a city?
Indeed. In fact, because of last night's success, I've already talked to a couple of different leaders in marijuana law reform and drug policy, including some major funders, and I'm going to guess that by this time next year, many of us will be talking about or celebrating votes in places like Michigan, Oregon, Massachusetts, possibly California and Nevada, and because of the success in Colorado and Denver, maybe another Colorado initiative will come about. So this time next year will be many times more busy because of the efforts and successes of this year and the prior years.
And successful initiatives, the passage of federal and state legislation, these are the great fruits of grassroots activism. But the most common question you and Keith get is, when will marijuana be legalized? Many are ready to mark their calendar right now. But how do steps like what we saw in Haley, Idaho, and Denver, Colorado, are these the things that really bring us closer to that date?
Well, absolutely, because when we break down the three, or if you will, four ways that marijuana laws can actually legally be changed. I mean, we've got legislation at the federal level, we've got state legislation, we've got public initiatives, and then we've got executive orders from governors and presidents. Well, let's discount the last one. It doesn't seem like any governor or president is going to issue an executive order to get us out of this terribly misguided prohibition of marijuana. So we know that here in Washington, D.C., the federal government is always the last to catch on to these changes and currently is still very recalcitrant regarding marijuana law reform. So that really only leaves city or municipal and state initiatives along with legislation to change the laws. Yes, we can continue to litigate where possible, but in the end, when a person asks rightly, when will marijuana laws reform? Well, it's when they get involved in sort of officially informing their elected officials through their vote that they want to see these reforms happen. So whether they're plebiscites, which have been happening for years up in Massachusetts, or whether they're binding initiatives that have happened in places like California and with Prop 215, which set forward this cataclysmic change in medical marijuana laws in this country, it all begins with the individual stakeholder caring and getting involved.
Righto. Well, Alan, this has been a great conversation here today. I really appreciate you taking time out of a busy day at the Normal headquarters in Washington to join us for our election roundup here today.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Chris.
Alan St. Pierre is Normal's executive director. You can contact him through Normal's website at norml.org. Stay tuned. We've got our cannabis science segment coming up with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Have you ever wondered what Amsterdam is all about? Don't just read about the culture that has accepted cannabis. Experience it firsthand with CS Travel's Sensible Amsterdam Tour with Normal. Travel to one of Europe's most beautiful cities this January for an educational and recreational visit to a city that regulates cannabis like alcohol. CS Travel has arranged an exclusive visit for reform-minded Americans that includes a private tour of some of Amsterdam's most renowned coffee shops, educational seminars with coffee shop proprietors, local law enforcement, members of the Cannabis Retailers Association, and Normal staff. Entertainment includes a special evening at the Boom Chicago Comedy Club, canal tours, visits to the city's many museums, including the world-famous Van Gogh Museum. Don't just wonder about Amsterdam, experience the beauty and freedom of this unique city firsthand with CS Travel and Normal Sensible Amsterdam Tour. Pricing information is available online at coffeeshoptravel.com. That's coffeeshoptravel.com. Or call toll-free at 800-816-1846. That's 800-816-1846. Be a sensible American. Visit Amsterdam with CS Travel and Normal this January. Call 1-800-816-1846 right now to book your trip. More information is available at normal.org.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
E Each Wednesday here on the Audio Stash, we get the chance to talk about the science of cannabis with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Mitch is professor of psychology at the State University of New York. He's author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, editor of Pot Politics. He's got a new book coming out in the winter called A Parent's Guide to Marijuana, and you can catch a monthly column from Dr. Mitch in High Times magazine. Mitch, welcome back here to the show today.
Great to be on the show, Chris.
Always good to speak with you, Mitch. Today we get to discuss an exciting report out last week from the UK. The headline in Normal News last week was Britain pot use drops following drugs reclassification. Illicit drug use hits record low after cops cease arresting minor pot violators. Now, there has been a push since Gordon Brown took over the job of prime minister there to reclassify cannabis and make it more restricted again. But this data shows that the deterrent effect that many seek was gained here by liberalization and not by criminalization. Is the data here a surprise, Mitch, or was this somewhat expected?
It's funny because I definitely had hopes of results like this, and I knew in my heart that by giving law enforcement an opportunity to focus on real crimes and hard drugs, that the hard drug use was definitely going to go down. But I had no idea that actual cannabis use would go down, and I was taking a close look at these surveys and saw, these are really good methods. I really trust these data. This looks like a superb way of measuring what they're trying to get at, and in fact, people are using less cannabis in a company with this decrease in the penalties. I think this is particularly timely because, big wigs in the British government are saying, oh, we need to go back to the old ways. We need to make sure pot penalties are more severe. And in fact, these data suggest that that is not only not necessary, but in fact potentially harmful. When I talk to folks in the UK about how this could happen, how could it be that with, decreased penalties, use would actually go down, a lot of them mention that folks often get offered cannabis and think, well, this may be my last chance given what the penalties are. I better go ahead and use it now even though I may not have it as my top priority. And in fact, when you look at the, use in the previous month, now that the penalties aren't so bad, people seem to think, oh, well, maybe I will actually get another chance, and they don't feel compelled to use every time they have the opportunity. I find that a curious mechanism and one that's really worthy of further investigation.
That is very, very interesting. And when we talk about a drop in use, it wasn't just a little. Among Britons aged 16 to 24, cannabis use dropped 20%. That is huge. Much more of an effect than any criminalization measures or harsher enforcement.
Well, and in fact, like all our public service announcements, all our intense school education programs never get a 20% drop. And so this is really an astounding thing. And again, I think part of it may be this forbidden fruit thing we've talked about before. We've seen in the social psychology literature, you make something forbidden, and sure enough, people want it all the more. Now that it's not such a big deal, perhaps people just really don't have the same kind of draw to it simply as an opportunity to defy authority.
Now, Mitch, here in the U.S., among those aged 18 to 25, the regular use of cannabis is almost twice what it is in the U.K. We have far harsher laws, policies, and penalties.
Well, and it's intriguing because although the age groups aren't exactly parallel, we're talking about essentially half that many in the UK in a comparable age are using. Is this just the result of a difference in criminal penalties? We'll never know for sure, but it looks like this drop, at least, is definitely something we can attribute to this change in legislation. I particularly want to point out that when these laws first changed a few years ago, everyone was worried about some outrageous increase and things were going to go awry immediately. And although there were a few complaints about, more public use, the police cracked down on that without having to change the laws about possession and penalties for possession. And they've gotten use down, they've gotten these changes in hard drug use, and I'm eager to find out, because these data will also be available soon, is how have things changed as far as arrests for other violent crimes are, because it seems like now if law enforcement has more time, because they're not wasting time, fingerprinting and taking folks down to the down to the station for minor pot offenses, is there an opportunity to increase arrests on the kind of crimes we really want to make sure people get arrested for, like the violent crimes?
Also, Mitch, when it comes to these classification designations, it seems like the model in the UK is similar to the one we have here in the United States under the Controlled Substances Act.
Well, it's interesting because at least depending on how you look at it, ours is modeled a little bit like theirs. The bottom line here is this classification makes it so that law enforcement officers are certainly still allowed to arrest folks if they feel like there's some kind of aggravated circumstances. So if you're smoking pot at your high school on school grounds, you're going to get arrested. But with this Class C classification schedule, essentially the police can confiscate your pot until you go home. And that's the kind of thing where you can see how that's going to take markedly less time, still be a deterrent in the sense that, you know, police officers are involved, but doesn't have any of these outrageous negative consequences as far as draining law enforcement time or time in the justice system.
Also, GW Pharmaceuticals, the maker of the sublingual natural cannabis spray, Sativex, they're based in the UK. So is the British drug classification scheme a bit easier for scientists to work under when conducting cannabis research?
What I'm hoping to see, actually, is more of the British, UK scientists getting an opportunity to do some of the medical work that we've been begging to have done here in the United States. So, you know, recently a number of folks at the ONDCP have been criticizing what little work we can get done here on what I think are some real nitpicky grounds, and the opportunity to maybe sidestep some of the problems we have in research here by going to the UK and administering cannabis to those who need it most is, you know, a big chance to gather the kind of data that we could then use to make these arguments. I realize that sort of reflects my naive and tacit assumption that the ONDCP and the DEA would follow a rational argument. But again, as more and more data are collected, I feel like the, you know, utility of medical use is definitely going to be continued to get support, and the opportunity to point out that the negative consequences of cannabis use are really minimal, and that the biggest problem right now is the set of legal problems created by these penalties for possession more than any negative consequence ever associated with the actual use of the plant.
And Mitch, do you think this report by the Home Office will have some impact on the UK? Perhaps quell this call to move cannabis back to a more criminalized place?
The report's only been out a few days, and I am not seeing the kind of hype that we saw previously this year when cannabis and psychosis links were hypothesized, so that's a little disappointing. Nevertheless, I don't see the continued push for these reclassification stories, so I'm not seeing a lot of even the more conservative papers continue their cry out for, oh, let's return back to this Schedule B arrangement. And I'm hoping that maybe this is working in the sense of maybe it won't get a lot of coverage as far as these results, but it'll at least put a damper on these cries for altering the schedule and increasing penalties back to the old days.
Righto. Well, Mitch, this has been a great conversation, as always, here today. I really appreciate you joining us each week here on the Audio Stash.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you again, Mitch. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, editor of Hot Politics. He's got a new book coming out this winter called A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. You can catch a monthly column by him in High Times magazine, and he teaches at the State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Mitch joins us each Wednesday here for our Cannabis Science segment. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow.
podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.